Welcome to our series on social capital. My name is Tristan Claridge and I'm the director of the Institute for Social Capital. And I'm joined by Lyndon Robison, Emeritus Professor of Agricultural and Resource Economics at Michigan State University. Welcome, Lyndon.
Thank you, Tristan, and welcome to all of our viewers and listeners. It's a pleasure to have this time to share with you.
Lyndon and I have both been working on the concept of social capital for a long time, with Lyndon initially approaching it from economics, whereas I came from sociology and social theory. We're both very passionate about the concept, and our different backgrounds and perspectives make for interesting conversations and engaging debates. In this episode, we'll discuss how social capital changes over time. Does it depreciate? And in some cases, does it actually appreciate and increase in its value or its usefulness? So, Lyndon, let's start broadly. What do you think about this issue? How do you think social capital changes over time?
Well, I think we would begin by agreeing that it surely does change. I mean, if we can agree, which we've usually started at this point, that whatever social capital is, it has to do with relationships or how we're connected. And one way we're connected is by the degree to which the well-being, the changes in the well-being of others affect our own. So if we can use that as our starting point, then yes, our connections, our relationships, the degree to which we internalize the well-being of others surely changes. And who we care about changes. And so we meet a new person and we find out where we share a lot of things. We have a lot of similar interests, or we have an opportunity to engage in an activity where the outcome requires our cooperation. And we find out that, yes, I care about you, our social capital has increased. And we need look no farther than our webinar. I don't know how many years ago it's been, but that was the first time we'd met. It was online. And we found out that in the course of that webinar, my goodness, we're similar in so many ways, and we find a shared interest or passion in the study of social capital. And now 2 years later, we've been meeting weekly or something like that. And it's been a wonderful thing. So that would be a case where we started from zero, and you'd be welcome to stay in our home if you ever crossed the pond.
And the literature supports that kind of view, that it takes time to build social capital, that, you know, it takes time to build trust, that it's through repeat interactions that we develop whatever it is that we mean by social capital, but certainly the nature of the relationship, the strength of the connection that we have with each other takes time to build. But presumably also, if we discontinued contact and that regular interaction that we have, that there's a belief that perhaps it would depreciate, that we would lose or it would diminish over time if we didn't have regular contact. What are your thoughts about that, and what's actually happening? Like, what's the process that results in depreciation?
So to use your language, and the theory of social interaction, when we communicate, when we connect, we exchange a signal, or it may be a physical thing that has meaning. And as a result of that exchange, our relationship changes. And if those are positive and they persist over time, then our connection increases, and we would say that as a result of repeated social actions where we exchange what we've referred to in the past as relational goods, our social capital is going to increase. And on the other hand, we could, let's say, find that we disagree significantly over something of importance. Or we may find an example where our trust or expectation of each other or someone else was violated or turned out to be not consistent with what we expected. And then suddenly we find a separation. And like you said, I retired from the university a couple of years ago when I was fully. When I was employed at the university, I had regular and daily contact and lots of interactions, which I don't have to the same extent. And I sense that some of our connections, my concern, are different or have probably less so as a result of that. Now, on the other hand, I have brothers and sisters that live in different parts of the country. And maybe twice or three times a year, we have some significant exchange. But I don't sense that our relationship has changed, even though the regular exchange of relational goods is you would think, main haven't occurred to the extent that would maintain those kind of relationships.
So then the way in which social capital changes then is quite complex because in some cases, I'm sure social capital doesn't really depreciate. Like you're saying, with family members, there's reason for that social capital to persist over time, and a lack of regular interaction isn't going to necessarily take away from the strength of that connection and bond that you have with family members. Whereas perhaps with other people, co-workers or colleagues, perhaps a lack of interaction does decrease the strength of that connection over time. And there's other factors that perhaps come into it as well, because when I reflect on, say, my friends from high school, I still think very positively about them. And I think the reason is because of, say, nostalgia or the attachment value that I place on the fact that we were both at high school together. You know, it's a time in my life that you don't repeat. You do it once. The friends that you had then, you experienced it together with them at that time. And even my friends who I maybe haven't seen in 25 years or more even, I would still, I think, have a strong relationship with them if I saw them now for that reason. But it would be different than somebody who I'm seeing on a regular basis and have that repeat interaction. So I wonder, like, what are the differences here? Like, what is the difference between a family member or a friend from high school compared to somebody like a colleague where maybe it does depreciate?
So we have used the word commonality in the past as simply something that we have in common that enables the exchange of relational goods. And these commonalities vary in importance. For example, I could be in the same phone book with a lot of other people. That's a commonality. But it doesn't enable the exchange of relational goods or almost any other goods for that matter. But there are other commonalities that are really emotionally charged that really enable the exchange of significant amounts of relational goods. For example, going to school when you're young, I mean, that's 100% of your school experience. And that's an important part, and on a regular basis, and those are formative years, and so they may loom large, and like an investment that's acquired value, those because they were significant, they endured, and they came at a time that they were very important. So, in the case of maybe and somewhat related. Having grown up with my brothers and sisters and having a commonality that isn't going to go away, it doesn't change. I mean, the fact that we're biologically linked and, we have the same parents, the same heritage, and so on. those are going to be persistent in their ability to enable us to connect. They're always there, and so their depreciation rate is very low. In contrast to my colleagues at the university, who I had very good relationships with, we were connected because we were studying the same things. And for the most part, we didn't have a lot of other social activities. It was mainly professional. And so it was sort of like breathing. As long as you're breathing, you're going. But then when you stop, that kind of you're not exchanging those relational goods. You're not having those social interactions, and the depreciation rate is much higher. And I'm also thinking too that when we decide to invest or disinvest, we're thinking about, well, is this relationship, is this investment of social capital likely to persist over time? Will I benefit from this relationship in a significant way? And that probably influences. And I think I mentioned last time, sitting in the airplane next to someone on a 2-hour flight and saying, the benefits from this relationship will only exist for the next 2 hours beyond this. And so that's different than a neighbor who you say, we're going to be living side by side for the next 20 years. It's probably worthwhile to get acquainted and have a barbecue in the backyard or something like that.
And as we've discussed before, social capital is about the ways in which we're connected, which is about individual social relationships, but it actually goes beyond individual social relationships to the way in which we belong and we have commonalities and we're connected within social groups or social identities or social structures. And so it occurs to me that there's reasons in your family environment, there's reasons, there's connections there that provide reasons for you to maintain the relationship, to maintain a positive relationship because of those commonalities and those connections that exist. Compared to colleagues, while you were at the university, you had those connections that were strong. You had the identity, you had the belonging, you had the significance, and the negative relationships could have flow-on impacts within your work environment and within your life, which don't apply quite so much anymore. You still have a level of connection there to them because they were part of you, they were your colleagues, and you still have some identity and you still have some nostalgia, attachment value, and so forth. But it certainly has changed in the ways in which you're now connected to those people.
There's another way that we can be connected, and it's through symbols, tokens, something that has acquired meaning and value beyond what an identical object would be. For example, if I gave my wife flowers for our anniversary, and then later she went to the store and won the door prize, which happened to be the identical flowers, they're not going to be the same. And so sometimes we can be connected to people that we've never met, that and we are connected to them through attachment values that we both share. Our commonality is attachment value, a commitment to a cause, a symbol, a place, a thing, and so on. So, there's a lot of international conflicts right now, and you say, well, what binds people together when I've never met anyone from who is fighting, probably I met from Ukraine, but yet I feel a sense of connection and commitment to them because I think we share ideas. I think we, view sort of the political landscape in a similar way. Similarly, when I was a Rotary Club member, I had attended a Rotary Club meeting in a country, Sweden, when I was on leave there, and had a wonderful time and felt like I had friends. because even before that meeting, we had attachment value to symbols and songs and meanings that were associated with our club. Religion and other things, sports often brings people together by means of a shared attachment value. So again, social capital can be formed, can be appreciated. And we can appreciate it through different means, and even with people that we're not physically in contact with.
Yeah, it seems that uncertainty perhaps plays a role in this as well. Like when I again thinking about high school friends, recently I met somebody who I didn't like at high school. I hadn't seen him in 30 years, and I said to my wife, "Oh, I didn't like him very much in high school. He wasn't very nice." But the first thing I said to my wife was, "I bet he's not like that anymore. I bet he's nice now. I bet he's different than he was." And so, relationships where we haven't had regular contact, surely there's some degree of uncertainty about the nature of that relationship or the nature of that person or what they would or wouldn't do. And that uncertainty perhaps depreciates the social capital because you're not quite so sure that you do trust them and they are trustworthy and they will exchange relational goods to use that terminology with you. And so perhaps that's one of the reasons why it depreciates, that a lack of regular interaction reduces the currency, as in not money, but how current and the amount of certainty you have about the nature of the relationship. So perhaps that's a factor as well.
I would think that might be the case where perhaps cheap social capital or negative social capital that may depreciate over time, as well as social capital. In both cases, it brings the relationship closer to neutrality or indifference. And then in both cases, you have a chance to build it back to something positive. I think we could all find examples where someone with whom we had a conflict years ago, you come back together and say, well, that wasn't significant. Wasn't a significant. Let's build a relationship anew. And even in a micro relationship, any relationship is going to go up and down. And some places it's going to be stronger and weaker. And you look back over sort of a negative exchange of relational good and say, yeah, let's move on and put that in the past and depreciate that as a significant event in your relationship. And that simply goes to the point that you made at the beginning, that relationships are dynamic. They reside in people, and they truly are dynamic and change with what we exchange, what we invest in our relationship, how our commonalities change, and our experiences, we change as we move through life's ebbs and flows.
And that brings up the idea of maintenance as well, because we've talked about maintenance being regular interactions. But maintenance could occur, for example, with social media, where you just simply keep aware of the other person. And that level of awareness, and I guess it reduces the uncertainty because you're seeing what the person's doing and who they are and how they're acting in their life. And so you feel like you still know them and you still know who they are and what they're doing. And that perhaps creates the consistency and the currency in the relationship, even though you're not having any social interaction with the person. And that could be two way, where on social media you both follow each other and you both are seeing each other's activities, or it may be one way communication effectively. And it re reminds me of someone I knew a long time ago who ended up hosting a television show. And we weren't particularly good friends, but because I would then see him on television fairly regularly, I felt like I still knew him. But he probably didn't feel the same way about me because he didn't see me on television. So that currency for him wouldn't have been maintained. So it's an interesting idea and discussion about how social capital may depreciate, but how also we may be able to maintain our social capital as well, even via quite low cost mechanisms like social media.
So you raise really an interesting point, particularly with public figures. So I won't refer to a specific case, even though I have a specific case in mind. The person is hired with a lot of fanfare and at a high salary to be the coach or the trainer of a significant sports team, a college football team. And then there is a scandal that sort of comes to light. And suddenly this person that we you thought was, kind of going to help unify the community and the and bring success to the team has now lost some this social exchange has through the media. None of us, I don't think, were intimately involved. We were involved through social media and the media. Suddenly, this person's social capital has almost vanished, and so we and we see this in the news that we're constantly receiving signals that either lead us to want to strengthen our one-way relationship with that person or cause, or move away from it. And I don't know what how those exchanges through some medium, how different they are than face-to-face exchanges, probably not as significant. But we are constantly receiving and exchanging signals that change how we view our relationship with another person.
Yeah, absolutely. And people sometimes ask me, how can I build my social capital from an individual point of view? What's the biggest thing that I can do? And a lot of people think that you would go and you would network, you would go and meet people, and that's the single biggest and most important thing you could do. But my perspective is different, is that you go and you take on a role within your community, ideally a volunteer role. Some sort of charitable organization, something perhaps that aligns with your work or your interests, perhaps it's in a sporting club or association. But by taking on that role, you're then meeting people and they're getting to know you by virtue of your role. And if it's a big enough role, then maybe you appear in the media and there's articles about you, and all of that is growing your social capital because people are becoming aware of you, people are then meeting you, and any relationships you have are effectively being maintained through that position, that role that you have. And to me, that's the single biggest and most important way that you could grow your social capital if you want to grow it significantly. And that would be my recommendation.
I couldn't agree more. There is another aspect to relationships and appreciating or depreciating our social capital that responds to our different needs. So, one of our social emotional needs is to belong. And we find a famous person or a person whose approval we would like to cultivate. And I'm thinking of, for example, a famous athlete who has performed unusually well. And so you buy the sweatshirt and you watch the games and you identify and so on. And the famous athlete may or may not have any interest in you except as a source of income that he or she can use your social capital for him or her, and then commodify it, which means I will exchange that, use that to create money. And so we have this word in our vocabulary called commodification, in which it means that we try to exchange something that has attachment value that's significant for its association and connection to a relationship. We try and exchange that for a money, for something for money, and in the process reduce its sort of attachment value and its ability as a source of building, of investing in our social capital.
Yeah, surely that's an important way that social capital can change over time. And I think it's and highlights an important case of that. Well, we've run out of time for this episode, Lyndon. It's been fascinating as always discussing with you, and I look forward to the next one.
Thank you, Tristan, and thank you to all of you that have joined us. See you next week.